All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if Cam Newton could be the perfect partner for Antonio Brown.
And why Colin Kaepernick could be making his football comeback in the XFL. But we start every day with a Whitlock. What you got today, big dog?
You can't accuse LeBron James of false advertisement. He wears his indifference to basketball on the front of his chest. LeBron's goal of proving to the world that he's more than an athlete is admirable, but it's poison for the organization, paying him $35 million this season to play basketball. The Los Angeles Lakers are footing that bill. If I were Jeannie Buss, I'd want a rebate or perhaps even a refund. Hollywood James is disinterested. He's leading the NBA in finger-pointing, matador defense, and off-the-court side hustles. Last night, the 24-38 Memphis Grizzlies took advantage, beating the Lakers and dropping LeBron's squad two games below 500 and in the 10th place in the West. With just 22 games left to play, I know someone who looks pretty prophetic. This season is going to be an epic failure. The main thing isn't the main thing, and that's never a good thing. It's going to diminish James's standing among his peers who still prioritize basketball over everything. The Lakers are a 500 club this year and no closer to unseating the Warriors next offseason. Now, you can be like King James and blame all this on his supporting cast. He keeps whining that his young teammates aren't fully focused and invested in basketball. He appears oblivious to the fact he isn't focused or invested either. Tired of pursuing Michael Jordan's legacy, the chosen one has fixated on a more attainable target. Jay-Z, media mogul, brand ambassador, pop culture darling, black Twitter icon, political puppet. LeBron is bored with athletics. That's why he's branded himself as more than an athlete. He's a talk show host, a public intellectual, an educator, a social justice warrior, a wine connoisseur, and now a rap music producer. Yesterday, the rapper 2 Chainz and Apple Music released a 1-minute behind-the-scenes hype video featuring LeBron's work on 2 Chainz' newest album, Laker Boys Like Trap Music. Okay, that's not the name of the album, but take a peek at the video.
I'm rare. I'm rare. I'm rare. Like a $2 bill. Like a $2 bill.
Y'all seen that video?
According to the time stamp on that video, that was shot just before midnight on February 1st, approximately 17 hours before the Lakers tipped off a Saturday night game against the Golden State Warriors. LeBron skipped the game, blaming load management. He did not mention drinking wine and writing rhymes with 2 Chainz as part of his load mismanagement. The greatest player in the game skips a contest against the greatest team in the game, and you wonder why the young Lakers aren't fully focused and invested? Really? There's no mystery here. Lakers great James Worthy said there's a virus within the team. It's indifference. LeBron has it, and it has spread to the rest of the team. The danger for Magic Johnson and the Lakers is it won't be easy snapping LeBron out of his basketball indifference next season. LeBron is a social media animal. He has 47 million Instagram followers and 42 million Twitter followers. Those are the platforms and the stages he performs on most passionately. It's no longer a basketball court. Social media has hacked LeBron's hardwiring. Good luck to Magic, Adam Silver, and the NBA in their attempt to recode their most important asset. All right, joining the desk now, a pair of former NBA champions, Dante Jones and Matt Barnes. Marcellus, let's start with you. Has LeBron become bored with basketball?
No, absolutely not. Not the right word, not the right terming of what LeBron's going through right now. Like many of players, especially in the latter stages of your career, no matter what your success is in that moment or previous, your eyes are a little bigger than your stomach, and you start to make some miscalculations in terms of what you can take on because you're a veteran. The ego starts to grow to a place where you're like, I could do this endeavor and still be me. But the problem is Father Time's undefeated, correct? So when you still are you, LeBron, which is amazing in work ethic and production, you have to be even more of that same LeBron to be the same LeBron because you're 34 right now. So this is Kobe 2.0 without all the optics of effort. One, they gave LeBron a 4-year contract and they knew that he was going to tackle more things than just on the court. But that's what the Lakers are based on. Showtime 2.0. They always been an entertainment-based product talking about championships on the court.
Kobe was making rap albums.
Kobe had a song out when he first got in the league. Remember that?
Him and
what do you mean?
No, he made a whole
it was
album.
Horrible. He shouldn't make an album after that one album. Song. It was horrible. You hear that song with him and Tyra? Never mind. And this is the same thing that LeBron is going to go through right now. When you take on all those things, as I've told you before.
Talk show host.
Look, I don't care what it is. Look, I was a DJ my rookie year. Not a problem in the world. I was DJing the owner's party.
Talk show.
Not a problem. I had a talk show as well. I did everything until them sacks start disappearing. And then all of a sudden, damn it, what is Marcellus up to? So you could climb up the hill with all this on your back, LeBron, you can stay at the top. But when you start to show any decline, we're going to blame this. So LeBron James is just in the same conversation as many athletes before him. You're biting off a little more than you could chew.
Bored? You don't think he's bored?
I don't think he's bored. I think, good point, he may have bit off more than he can chew. But I love the fact that more of an athlete, that's just what today is. You know, you want to take advantage of off the court as long as on the court stays his first focus. I think more than anything right now is you're just seeing father time. You're seeing him coming off his first significant injury of his career. You know what I mean? And then to be thrown back in the fire like, okay, we got to make this push now. I'm going to turn that superhuman button on. But he's coming off an injury he's never had. He's never set out this many games. Mm. A completely new team that they just completely try to throw the whole team away. So now you got to convince all these guys you just tried to trade that I'm with you, I believe in you, we're on this same page, let's make these playoffs. So I just think the team is on islands right now. But it's, you know, like I said, I don't take anything away from him.
Did you watch last night's game?
Defense. Yes. I said earlier on the earlier show, I mean, my only knock on LeBron is just I'm not asking you to guard the best player anymore, but I'm asking you to be a better team defender, make that second,
that's
third
not boredom?
Effort. No, that's just effort.
Yeah. That's effort, and that's all it is effort, effort. At the end of the day. Effort. It's giving some of yourself to your teammates and making that extra play and leading by example. His team defense is poor right now, and we have to address that and note that. It's poor, but you can't say somebody's bored with basketball when he went out there and had 24, 12, and 11. Like, I think we're getting numb to his performances, and you can't go out and triple-double, a 20-point triple-double and say somebody's bored. He's averaging 27, 9, and 8 for the year. That's not somebody bored with basketball. Mm. Now, is he not doing what he's supposed to be on defense? Yes, you can address that. Did they take two losses they weren't supposed to? Yes, you can address that, but it's not boredom by no means. He has a lot on his plate. You're absolutely correct. But he's also producing. 27, 9, and 8 is not a bored performance. Like, I couldn't do it. 96% of the NBA couldn't do it. Right. I think you get numb with his talent and you don't pay attention to actually what he's doing.
Based on LeBron's standards.
He hasn't averaged 27, 9, and 8.
He's not giving any effort on defense.
Right. He's not giving the appropriate effort on defense. Does he give
that.
Some?
So he's lazy, not bored.
No, he doesn't believe in what he's about and what he's a part of. When you don't believe in them, it actually starts to affect you. You start to say, why give 100% for this? Because I know what the end game is going to look like. And guess what they start thinking? You don't even believe in me. So why should I give 100% to you? Because I'm not going to be here to materialize this. And you just sitting there with that seesaw effect.
I think one thing he did a great job in with Cleveland was he made everyone believe in themselves, first of all, and believe in him and buy into the story and the narrative they were trying to pursue throughout the career. Throughout the season. This season hasn't been that way. Like I said, that trade deadline really put a fracture in that locker room. And Dante, and you can attest this too, locker room chemistry is a huge part of your success on the court, and they don't have that right now.
And I don't think they have the appropriate chemistry for a LeBron James team. And mind you, and Matt can attest to this too, like when you get to a certain part in your career, you're just doing different things than when you're doing in the beginning of your career. And when you have a majority of your locker room a certain age, and the back end is where your best player sits at, how do we communicate, how do we develop a relationship if we live two separate sets of lives? If you got kids, you have responsibilities, and they just have video games, like I'm not saying that's what they're doing, but you cannot develop some sort of bond that translates on the court.
The guy is supposed to be the GOAT of his sport, or in the conversation. He's supposed to be the Tom Brady of his sport. I'm looking at a 41-year-old Tom Brady who's not bored, who's not bothered, or seems to be adapting to the fact that he's far older than all of his teammates. Again, y'all, I just don't, boredom is a better explanation. Y'all just calling him lazy and a dog.
You can't bring Tom Brady into any equation by bringing him to singularly. You got to bring Bill Belichick with him. Mm-hmm. He sets the tone for the locker room and the players. Tom Brady is not the only leader there. Bill cuts most of that stuff out.
Keep in mind, this is a completely new team, new everything. You know what I mean? Like I said, chemistry isn't built in one season. That's why I gave LeBron a pass at the beginning of the season. I didn't expect too much out of them. You know, I thought they would do better. I thought they would do better. But at the same time, like what, they're fighting to get to the playoffs, the AC for what? To have 2 extra weeks to play Golden State and then you don't take a vacation.
Okay, let me try this.
Oh no, your Tom Brady point. I want to stick to that.
Go ahead, please.
TB12, Facebook Live, all that stuff.
All
is
that
new.
Synergy.
But you know what? No,
that's synergy when with playing the game.
As soon as you fall down one step or farther, and Tom Brady had by his standards not a successful year by his numbers. He won the Super Bowl, and yes, I give him respect, but by his own standards of
41.
Play. Okay, that's my point. So if you don't win the Super Bowl, guess what happens? The articles that they wrote about him last year, they'll start to pile up.
He won the Super Bowl, though, so we don't
have to talk about him. Oh, yeah, I'm not dissing them.
Okay, let me try this. Let me try this. The night before they play Golden State, the second game back from his injury, he sits out. How do you think that plays, even if you take 2 Chainz and doing the rap album the night before out of it, how does that message play with his teammates, the young guys?
But you have to realize he's coming off an injury that kept him out longer than that. But I'm saying the night before, didn't he play an overtime game? Like, he played 40-something
minutes
his first game back. You don't want to throw him back in the fire, especially if the goal is to try to make the playoffs. They know probably regardless, they probably weren't going to beat the worst, and why not hold him back? Because everyone wanted them to see
everybody
the Warriors.
Everybody in that locker room sees it your way, the young guys. You're pushing 40 or, you know. And you're
39, right.
39. You're talking the 22, 23. Brandon Ingram sees it that way.
They may not understand, but you got to also think when LeBron sits down, that's when other guys think, I'm going to get my numbers tonight. So they're probably not tripping too much.
Well, to your point, if you're a young guy in the locker room, this is how you could take it the wrong way or differently than Matt and Dante would. You could sit there and say, wait a minute, one, you've been hurt all this time, and then you came back, and then now you're saying that you can't play because you need to rest. Well, then why don't you rest? A lot of fans say that. I think it's nonsense, but a lot of players could be thinking that. But then you could double down on that thought and say, damn, Lonzo's a rapper. Lonzo got an album out. And the first time you want to just go and bop with somebody, you don't even want to bop with your teammate in any respect. You're going to go with 2 Chainz. So what it does, it shows dual reality. Like, we get graded on a different scale than you, LeBron. When we're injured and then we come back, we're expected to go maximum effort. You come back, it's going to still be this reserved effort. They may be looking at 2 different ways at the same thing.
He's earned that,
translated.
At the same time, he's earned that.
But when you're watching film study with a vet, and I play with some vets when they're coming down the hill, you start to say,
there's no question. I think you see it mostly. All the off-the-court BS, whatever, to me, it's just a little bit more effort on defense. His offensive numbers are just like they normally are. Mm-hmm. And like I said, his ability to possibly get that team all back on the same page.
Do we have the highlight of the 3-point shot at the end of the game that basically closed out the game? Y'all the former basketball players. If you're in the film room, that's LeBron's man is shooting this three.
Terrible.
It's effort.
Terrible.
It's just
effort.
It's effort. It could be a miscommunication, but it's effort. And I'm taking
that
as effort.
I don't care. That's the only way I would interpret that as a teammate. This dude don't even care.
How about worse than that? When they get to the free throw line, LeBron's there, and it's a 4-point game, 2 possession. All you got to do is make a free throw to make it 1 possession. He bricks it. And then next thing you know, you don't see the
everybody
effort, and you brick
shots.
It. No, well, LeBron always misses those shots in clutch moments.
There's no excuse for this right here. You know what I mean? Like
Lakers?
I said, that's the one thing you can, if you want to nitpick LeBron, it's his effort on defense, you know? But like you said, he said he's only 34, but in basketball years, he's probably about 41 with all the miles he's logged in the playoff games and all-star teams and Olympic teams.
That's not indifferent to winning. He doesn't care.
Activated. I thought he was activated.
One thing that you have to deal with on him is you have to find different ways to motivate and reach him for his deficiencies, because I've never sat on here and said that he doesn't have deficiencies. I wait for you to pick him out. That is one of them, his effort on defense at times, And then it's your responsibility of your staff to reach him and let him know this and be able to call him out. If you don't have the right person to be able to hold him accountable for things like this,
can do that in that locker
room. There's nobody right now that can hold him accountable for things that way. That's been my whole point at this point.
Who's been holding LeBron accountable his whole career? Mm. Only LeBron. That's the reality.
When you have success, you take the gas off of certain things, and that's what your staff is supposed to do to keep you accountable at all points and times. He's had so much success that he still needs somebody to. You've misunderstood to think that all athletes coach themselves. By no means.
No, I don't. Because
Tom Brady is being held accountable by Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick's letting him know when he's not holding up to the standard as the quarterback. Because he probably does have deficiencies. We just don't get a chance to see him. He has somebody that's holding him accountable.
Misunderstand what activated meant? Because you came up here and defended it. You said, now he's going to get into a different cycle of the season.
Right,
and his phases.
Right. So I said, yes. That's an effort conversation.
What does activated mean? It means I'm about to give you a different level of intensity and effort. No.
Right. So
why is he contradicting his own self?
They need him to be a superhuman right now, and he's just being regular old LeBron. So, yes, he's not doing
that.
That's
regular old LeBron. Mm. Not guarding his man at all.
You cannot take a game into one play. I'm sorry.
There's a bunch of other highlights in this game.
And that was deficiency in that game for the most part of this season. Okay. His team defense, his effort on team defense. You're absolutely correct.
Is on defense, and especially as a leader, you want to most of the time lead by example. I know I never got a chance to play with LeBron. I played against him plenty of times, but with Kobe, you never had to tell him nothing. You never had to. You knew no matter what, and he wasn't a vocal leader. He was one that would just give you that look, like you better be on. You know what I mean? So I don't know how playing with LeBron works, but I know playing with Kobe is he did it on both ends every single night. Every single night.
And I just because everybody here, y'all married, there's a couple of y'all married, everybody's been in relationships. There's different ways to spot indifference in a relationship. Mm. And a lot of times it's in the details. It's not in the big things. And so LeBron's going to put up his 26 points. He's going to grab the rebounds. He's going to get the assist. But it's the effort things that, to me, show the indifference.
I'm going to buy you the car. Let me get you the flowers. What time is it?
Every holiday, I'm going to be right there.
Yeah,
blah, blah, blah.
You're not giving me eye contact no more. Yeah. You ain't rubbed my shoulder in 2 weeks.
It's the little things. You know what I mean? In defense, it's the little things. The extra effort on defense is what separates teams, those rotations. Maybe if he doesn't get out there, whoever's in the corner, instead of studying up, takes him and LeBron X's out. But that still takes LeBron making a little bit of extra effort and not just any team.
All right, welcome back, Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Mark Schlereth. Time for a big story. Let's move to Pittsburgh, where Antonio Brown is definitely on his way out of town, but where he ends up is anyone's guess. Now Peter King suggests that the Carolina Panthers could be the perfect landing spot for the receiver, since new owner David Tepper is a former part owner of the Steelers, and because Cam Newton is in desperate need of a downfield threat. The question here is, would Antonio Brown fix Cam Newton? And while I think this is something Carolina should pursue, I don't think it would fix Cam Newton. Cam Newton has to fix himself. His footwork, his technique have to be better. Antonio Brown won't solve that. Antonio Brown could put a spotlight on the problems more so than help Cam Newton.
So you're going to really ride with this fix Cam Newton, like Cam Newton's broke down. Oh, AB's a surgeon. He's going to fix Cam Newton because that's the only thing wrong with Cam Newton. If you look at Cam Newton, he tried to play through injury and still posted what is highest career completion percentage.
They made the playoffs.
There we go.
They did.
There you go. So sorry, quarterbacks that make the playoffs, they're great. And then the ones who don't make it,
I'm not saying that.
Okay, second highest passer rating in his career. Cam Newton and AB will be a marriage made in heaven. I will go there. I will say that if you give him AB, it's going to be fireworks on and off the field, must-see television. And Cam Newton, if he is going to come back fully healthy at the beginning of the season, would Antonio Brown, will give him the deep threat that he needs. No disrespect to DJ Moore and Devin Funchess, but they weren't able to take the top off the defense consistently like AB would be able to. And then you pair him with Christian McCaffrey, now you have the trifecta you need in that offense.
Yeah, as far as fixing Cam Newton is concerned, Cam Newton went a long way to fixing himself last year with Norv Turner, talking to both of those guys, doing a Carolina Panthers game.
For eight games?
Well,
for eight games?
For eight games, but he had a shoulder surgery or a shoulder issue where Dave Tepper, their owners, actually said, we might sit you for the 2019 season. Mm. That's how significant it was. He missed a throw. I called a game against Cleveland. I called two games. A game in Cleveland where he had somebody down the field wide open for a touchdown. He couldn't throw it more than 35 yards. Ended up getting picked off.
Yeah.
That's how bad his shoulder was last year. Now, understanding mechanically what he had to fix, understanding more of the anticipatory nature of football, and essentially understanding offense. One thing about Cam Newton, you know, talent's wasted on talented people. And one of the issues that Cam Newton had is he's so physically gifted that he could get away and still be an MVP without truly understanding all that he needed to understand about playing the quarterback position. And he has taken it upon himself to fix that aspect of his game. 67% completion percentage throughout the entirety of last season. I think he started 14 games, and he played half of those games completely injured where he couldn't practice during the week. So I don't think it's so much about fixing Cam Newton. I think Cam Newton's gone a long way to fixing some of his issues. And the biggest part of this, you know, to be able to fix those things, you have to understand that you have an issue. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where Norv Turner came in and really changed the way Cam Newton thought about the game. Would Antonio Brown fit with what they're doing and the weapons they have? Shoot, Antonio Brown is a freak show. You know what needs to be fixed? And I'll tell you who can fix it. Ron Rivera can fix Antonio Brown because he's not going to put up with the baloney that Mike Tomlin put up with. And that's where that marriage would work in my mind.
That's a great point. I just want, as someone who I think watched virtually all of Cam's games, because I love to watch Cam play, and he did. First 4, 5, 6 weeks of the season, I was on here.
Right.
MVP level. My God, Christian McCaffrey's been awesome. And adding Antonio Brown to that mix would be awesome. However, and again, maybe it was all because of the shoulder injury.
Mm-hmm.
The second half of the season, he was inaccurate quite too often. And again, obviously, the obvious shoulder problems prevented him from throwing it downfield. And I'll just, there is, and look, I would pursue this in a heartbeat. This would be awesome for Cam. But there is some risk. Antonio Brown playing with Ben Roethlisberger, a guy that, regardless of whether they get along or not, Ben knows how to get AB the ball, and he does it often. If Cam somehow isn't as accurate, doesn't get him the ball on time the way Ben did, Antonio Brown's not a guy that's going to go quietly into the night. And look, the Panthers moved on from Steve Smith, an outspoken diva-type receiver, because they wanted Cam to have the freedom to throw the ball wherever the defense dictated. And so, again, there could be some sparks here. You just never know.
Well, there's a different level of cover and comfort when you talk about the Carolina Panthers. Over the years, their players have been able to have full expression on the field. You could talk about Cam Newton and all the issues that some fans have with him, but it was an effort of an organization that supported Cam Newton and let him have full expression. I think that's going to play well if AB's on that team, because there were times where now all of a sudden the owner mentality of your quarterback starts to creep into your locker room and you have issue with that. I don't see Cam Newton and AB butting heads like that. Also, your ownership, who was a part of the ownership group with the Pittsburgh Steelers, can easily play on that human capital saying, hey, I was there. I saw the bad from their side and I saw some of the things that you need to edit, but I'm here to take some of those hits with you. And then being down there in Carolina, that country, the way that they look at it is almost like a collegiate experience. Like, they rally for each other. And it's a little different, not on the island from the NFL, but certainly a little exempt from all the criticism.
I will say this about Rivera, and that's really what it comes down to, is he holds his guys accountable.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was a player. I played against him. He was part of that Bears organization that had one of the great defenses we've ever seen. Ron was a backup player in that, and he became a starter later on in his career. He was a really good player, but he is one of those guys that will hold you accountable. And Antonio Brown has been allowed to be a diva in Pittsburgh. He has been allowed by Mike Tomlin, as has Ben Roethlisberger. They have allowed that kind of behavior, and I just don't believe that Ron Rivera is going to go down that road.
Whitlock and Wiley, Cuttino Mobley is back with us. Let's move to the Lakers, whose struggles continued over the weekend with a 13-point loss to the Pelicans, who were playing without Anthony Davis. Less than a week ago, LeBron said his playoff intensity had been activated. But the Lakers are now one game under 500 and three games behind the Clippers for the eighth seed. After the game, LeBron said, "Everyone's accustomed to the losses, but, quote, I'm not accustomed to it. I'd never get comfortable with losing." But that wasn't all he had to say about his teammates.
It's how you approach the game every day. It's how you think the game every day. It's how you play the game. It's how you prepare for the game. And that's not even like when you get to the arena. That's like way before that. You know, like, is basketball, is that the most important thing while we're doing this? So you got to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. So I'm not saying that's what we are as a whole. Kind of looks that way at times, that, you know, sometimes we feel like we're afraid to be uncomfortable, kind of get out of our comfort zone, you know, kind of, you know, have that sense of urgency.
So the issue I think LeBron is suffering with, sometimes when you're on top of the mountain, there are no mirrors up there. It's just you all by yourself, and you look down on everybody else. And again, I think it's a struggle that everybody that's had success almost at any level does, to look in the mirror and to judge themselves. LeBron's the leader of the team. He's talking about being all in with basketball. Is basketball everything? And I don't think he's able to see that he set the tone for that. He's doing every damn talk show he can think to do. He's developing movies. He's trying to do everything. He's not all in on basketball. The rest of the players sense it, and they're following his lead.
Yeah, you got to hit LeBron with the Mr. Miyagi. No such thing as a bad teacher. No such thing as a bad student. That's what I said. Remember that?
Yeah.
It's bad teachers, man. This is Kobe Bryant 2.0. We've been here before, bro. I've been here. I remember Kobe doing it.
Yes.
Black Swan, White Swan. Remember that?
Yeah.
And he was calling out Pau Gasol and calling out everybody, saying,
how about 2006?
Man, these dudes are like, it's something about the Lakers. And I'm pointing out the Lakers because it's the biggest brand in basketball. It's La La, it's Hollywood. There's something about being the man on that team in this era with this pressure and their underachievements, where they cannot take that as a collective effort. Kobe could not. He had to displace himself from his teammates, even in championship efforts. Pau Gasol got punched in the chest by Phil Jackson. It got to that place where everybody was saying, I versus you. And now you're seeing LeBron just replicate that model. And it's sad to see that LeBron doesn't want to be the big dog, which means you take the hits for all of us young pups as we're starting to evolve and learn the game like you did. Kind of sad to see again.
Well, you make a great point, Marcellus. I've been through this, right? We all been through this, where the guys are young. And when LeBron first came in, the first month he's filling himself out to see who's going to take that next, you know, torch, whether it's Ingram, Ball, whoever it is. And the Ball was getting jerked around a little bit as far as starting, not starting, this, that, whatever. LeBron's not used to carrying younger talent. This is, you know, that younger talent where the patience is very short. And you said, when you come to the Lakers, when I come to the Lakers, there's an expectation, whether it's when Kobe first came in, right? Shaq and Kobe and now LeBron, there's an expectation that you have to live up to. So that's an unconscious pressure that's already on you, because you're the one that everybody's going to blast when things go wrong. And you're the one that everybody's going to lift up when things go well. That's just how it's got to work. Now, when I went with the Clippers in 05-06, before that, their records, let me just go 4 years back, 27-55, 28-54, 37-45, and then when I got there, 47-35, and we go to the Western Conference semifinals, okay? You still had the same guys, but they didn't know how to win. No disrespect to Elton Brand, Corey Maggette, nothing. But the point is, Corey was getting 20 a game, Elton was getting 20 a game, but they just found a way to lose. And that's what LeBron is saying. When you're finding ways to lose, even if I'm not here, I'm impatient. Yes, I'm doing movies and books and this and that all right now. I wasn't doing that early on in my years. That's not what I was doing early in my years. I was creating my legacy early on. My legacy still now, but I'm a little frustrated because when I'm watching you guys, whether you're at restaurants, on the road, how you act on the plane, practice, whatever it is, I'm a little irritated of you because you're not taking it in. This basketball is your life.
Should he not point the finger at himself at any point? Mm. Does he not deserve some of the blame for
that? No, you're right. I'm not saying he don't deserve blame, but what I'm saying is when you already, Jason, it's like you mentoring me. You're going to get impatient with me sometimes. I just switched my earpiece from here to here, and I was laughing at myself because I looked at yours. Sometimes you, before you get really good at something.
I'll say this, and anybody here that works with me can say this. I've told from day one, 3 years ago, I said, if anything ever goes wrong, it's my fault. It's not your fault, his fault, anybody. It's my fault. That's my philosophy. Mm-hmm. And again,
doesn't mean you don't get frustrated, right? You will get some frustration. Yeah, but you're live. Jason, you're really good at what you do. You're live. Now, if anything happens behind scenes that will disrupt your character, disrupt your personality that people see, after a while,
I'm going to start from a place of it's my fault. What did I do that caused them to make that mistake? It may turn out to be nothing, but my starting point is with me. And when you're LeBron James...
He's not the only one. Kobe Bryant, too.
And you come here, to me, the starting point... He came here, and he knew this year wasn't about championships. He knew it.
Okay.
And he hasn't handled it well, and he's doing a lot of finger-pointing because he's too concerned with narrative. He's too concerned with narrative and making sure he's always managing his legacy and reputation.
Can I ask you the question, being an athlete? Mm. When you were younger, you can do anything, okay?
Physically.
you basically never got hurt.
Oh, yeah.
The older you got... You get hurt. Now, your brain says something different than your body. So now when I'm getting hurt, these little knickknacks or whatever it is, now I'm frustrated, not with everyone else, I'm frustrated with myself because subconsciously, father time is starting to kick in. Not saying LeBron is, on a downcline, but he is impatient because the way you can turn it on 5 years ago, you can't do now.
Man. Well, the way I heard
it... He was in fourth place before he got hurt. That's all I'm saying.
The way I heard it is Howie Long said it best. I think Howie Long said it best. When you...
Here's the real of it. Stop it.
When you first get in the league, your elevator physically is at the top of the building. And mentally, and knowing the game, is at the bottom. He said, your prime is when they both meet. Because if this one's coming down, this one's coming up. Where they meet. LeBron's obviously is not in the same position right now. Here's what I witnessed from LeBron and what's going on with the Lakers. When we're watching you, guess what? We're also learning from you. Mm-hmm. And we're learning good behavior, bad behavior. This is what parents miss out on a lot of times. What did I tell you? Mm-hmm. What did you show me?
Yeah.
Hey, when we sitting there in the back of the bus, man, we trying to get a little extra work, whatever it may be, or we sitting there in practice and you got another $1 billion deal on the line, but we talking about this. Okay, that's fine, LeBron. That's cool, because we know you're going to show up, Mr. Triple-Double.
Right.
However, we watching film with you, brother.
You're so right.
Is that effort the best player in the game effort?
Right.
And you can point it out, but we don't need to point it out. We all see
it. Do as I say, not as I do.
Right, and then the collective confidence starts to erode. And next thing you know, it's like, well, if you ain't setting the tone, then what tone is there to live by mm-hmm. and to set? So. Mm-hmm. I think it's really been eaten up from inside.
And this is where I'm sympathetic to LeBron mm-hmm. because we in the media have the LeBron Olympics going on every day, every single day. And whether he wants to participate in LeBron Olympics or not doesn't matter. He just the LeBron Olympics are on and everybody's talking about my legacy and where I rate to Jordan. And so he got caught up in the LeBron Olympics and is hyper-focused on controlling media narratives. Everything that LeBron does now publicly is 1,000% calculated. And again, he's looking at this lost season. Mm-hmm. He don't want the blame for it.
Yeah.
Because it's a little knock against his Jordan legacy deal. And again, he didn't sign up for that. We created the LeBron Olympics and we've dragged him into it. I'm saying he needs some friends, just like Bob Kraft. A lot of these guys,
everybody need friends.
They do. Bob Kraft with 6 titles, LeBron James with all this success, all this money, everything. You got to have people in your camp that be like, hey, man, let's look at things a different way. Let all this finger pointing and bad mouth, because that's creating a narrative as well. Mm. And I think there are going to be guys around the league, LeBron needs to be careful, guys around the league, like, and Kevin Durant was the first one to step out here. The environment around LeBron is toxic. Not a direct shot at LeBron. It's a statement of fact that the LeBron Olympics are toxic. Toxic for LeBron and everyone caught up in it, and it becomes a blame game. And it's not a celebration of let's do it together. It's like, who's going to get blamed? Because only one guy's going to get credit if we win. Everybody else gets the blame. Somebody needs to pull LeBron's coat.
Mm. Okay. All right.
You got nothing.
No, LeBron James, listen, they're young. And being young is very frustrating. And LeBron James is like kind of, I guess, waking up out of the fantasy land of saying, wow, you know what? I can't just, you know, do this. I got to do way more.
Yeah, he said he was activated. Activate then, damn it. I don't know.
Here you go. Time to get antisocial.
Yeah, baby.
Y'all know this is my favorite segment. Catino Mobley back with us, joining us, Marcellus. All right, our social media manager, Darnell Smith, is here.
What's up, now?
Tell us what's popping on them Twitter streets.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling great. You looking good today, Catino.
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, I like drip. That chain yeah. out.
You know what I'm saying? I don't know what I think about that chain.
Wakanda forever.
I was going to get you one.
You what? Oh, well, I love it.
Never mind.
Where you get it from? Zamunda?
Meek Mill give you that?
He did.
All right, y'all. Let's get it going with the Oscars from last night.
Uh-oh.
The movie Green Book took home the award for Best Picture. Mm. Of course, this sent Twitter on a rampage with people arguing about whether or not the movie deserved to win the award. Most people thought it was ridiculous and slammed the Academy and the movie. Director Spike Lee was so upset that the movie won, he even got up and tried to leave the theater. I haven't seen the movie yet, but Whitlock, I know you recently watched it. Did you think it deserved Best Picture?
I watched the movie last night after the Oscars, after it won. And because I wanted to see what the fuss was about. I saw everybody going off. And I think most of the critics missed the mark. I don't think it was a good movie. I went and read what the guy's family, Dr. Shirley, the pianist, what his family had to say about the movie and the way it was portrayed. And so, but I'm not surprised that it won, because I felt like it hit the very liberal message of, and this is what Hollywood loves, here's a black guy with identity issues, and there's a white person there to teach him how to be black. And so that rings real true in Hollywood, and so I'm not surprised it got the highest award in Hollywood.
Man, I don't watch the Oscars because it ain't that damn serious, and it ain't that damn deep for every movie. Like, it's amazing, like, when you do a movie that's a depiction of someone's life, like the Tupac movie, whatever movie you want to pick, oh, they didn't nail it. They didn't say it the right way. You know what? It's 2 hours of somebody who lived for many a years, and it's very complex. And I liked the movie. It was one of my favorite movies last year. However, I didn't think it was going to win Best Picture, in part, because I didn't see the whole catalog of choices. That... Boys in Hood didn't win the Oscar 1 year. Y'all still believing in the Oscars? Y'all just lost.
I don't, but I'll say this, Marcel. I think if you watch the movie and just watch the movie, I do think it's a fine
movie. It was good. Really good.
But if you go and find out, like, well, hold on, man, they done portrayed this guy in a way that's offensive to his family and offensive to the truth, that's what made me disconnect from the movie.
Well, I didn't read what the family said. I took a different perspective about it. One of my best friends, John Gruntfest, he was telling me about, like, the NHL. And in the NHL, there's, like, the Hart Trophy, and then there's the Ted Lindsay Award, right? So there's the most valuable player, and then it's most outstanding. Now, me being African-American, as us four are, you want to see Black Panther. So besides Black Panther, besides Green Book, The Favorite, there was two other movies. I liked those two. So during the time that it is now, let's just say in America, Green Book showed me something totally different. Tony Lip, who was the Italian in there, he wasn't trying to tell him to be black. He was just saying, embrace your culture as well. Because Tony Lip, if you watch the movie, is rolling dice with the black guys.
We gotta go. We gotta move to the next topic. Yeah. But if you talk to the family, Tony Lip didn't teach him that, or didn't try to show him
that. Well, yeah,
that's most of
different stories.
Right, yeah. Next.
Moving on to my man Ocho Cinco, who's always spreading the love over social media, but on Friday took it to a new level. One of the Chaz Twitter followers said he was facing eviction, and after showing them the proof, Ocho sent him $1,500 via PayPal to take care of the bill. The fan responded with a screen grab of the payment, tweeting, God is our refuge and strength. I owe this man my life. Now, man, look, some people don't even loan you $5, so I thought this was pretty dope. But were you guys impressed by this?
Who made it public? The other guy or Chad?
The other guy. The full discussion's on Twitter.
I like it. Give it as anonymous to anonymous.
I got a problem with it. One, whatever decisions and whatever consequences, circumstances the guy's living in, mm-hmm. put him in this bad position, mm-hmm. which I am happy that Chad helped him. But what the guy obviously needs more is not to be in his position again, whatever right. those circumstances right. are. So this is kind of a Band-Aid of a situation, and it's good. But, you know, if I'm ever facing eviction or ever the times I wasn't out there. I wasn't, you know, I didn't have social media. I didn't do anything of that nature, right. something entertainment-based or right. just have. I'm on that grind to mm-hmm. go get this.
Right.
And so there's something that's deeper that we're not going to hit with this story.
Why did you post it?
And his fix is for how long? Is he got to come back next month?
Right, right.
So that's right. where I'm kind of, I don't want to.
And it's $1,500.
And we right there.
What kind of rent is that?
Now, hold on, man. Everybody ain't living in LA.
No, I'm not talking about that, but how long is that?
That's a Mobile.
That's a month.
That's a month.
All right. All right, Darnell, what's next?
Darnell, yeah,
right. Let's get into some NBA. On Saturday, the Bucks beat the Timberwolves, but the bigger story was Ja Rule's halftime performance. Ooh. The rapper took some heat over Twitter after facing some sound issues at the start of the show. Giannis obviously wasn't a fan because he was busy putting up shots in the middle of the performance. Mm. Even the Timberwolves Twitter page took a shot at Ja with a tweet mocking him from the Fire documentary. But Ja Rule clapped back saying, "You just jinxed yourself talking to the God this way. You're cursed now. Uh-oh. You won't win the championship for the next 30 years. Should the Timberwolves be worried about a curse from Ja Rule?
No, Ja Rule needs to be worried about that Fire Festival documentaries on Netflix right. and Hulu.
How about that?
To put a curse on his career for the next 30 years.
No, 50 Cent Ben did that. Why y'all trying to act like this brand new his
50,
issue?
50 and Ja been fighting forever.
Yeah, man, shout out to Ja Rule. Ja Rule just had a concert at the Novo, and it was cracking, people said. So,
Ja's my guy.
I like Ja Rule. I don't know why all the hate.
I'm sorry that happened.
Did you see Fire Festival?
I did. And he wasn't the leader of that. He was partners with him, but he was a minor silent partner.
Billy McFarland. Billy McFarland.
Yeah, come on, man. Let's go.
That's who it was, Billy McFarland.
Billy McFarland is the real G in this. He took the hit for everybody.
We should have.
Oh, that's the G?
He should have.
Yeah, he took the hit for everybody.
Nobody down with him.
But Jason, he should have.
Yeah, he's the one that.
Kendall Jenner. Bella Hayden, all of them, they endorsed it as well.
Mm-hmm. Not like Ja. Ja was right in the middle of it.
Because he thought he was going to get paid.
He thought he get a pay
murder.
He thought
pay
this is G, you.
Yeah. All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, so today on the Herd, A-Rod was talking about his support of superstar players getting paid big money. Take a listen.
People scream and shout when a player signs for $300 million, but when the Dodgers trade for north of $2 billion, or the Marlins trade for north of $1 billion, nobody says anything. It's like big, big, bad America supposed to make all the economics. But in a world, it should be more democratic. And if the industry's gone from $1 billion to $10 billion, it's good for it to be spread around and for players to get paid in a big way, and it's guaranteed.
Does he have a point here?
Yeah, he's got a point that certainly the players should benefit in the growth of Major League Baseball and all professional sports. But do they got to get these $300 million contracts? I don't know.
They should. It's always this dissension between ownership and labor. And in many, many facets of the interactions and when a team sells, oh, wow, good for them. When a player gets cashed in for a certain amount, what? And we always have that. I think it's in part the general public feels more connected to the labor because that's their life. And so they look at the players like, how dare you get what I deserve or I should be a part of, but ownership just seems distant from that and distant from a lot of the issues and the damning that should come.
I'm going to keep it short. If the owners and the team makes a lot of money and they're growing, then whoever's helping that should get paid money as well.
Right.
Get a raise as well.
There it is.
I just don't like the 10-year contracts.
Right. Yeah. That's long.
Anyway, all right, Darnell, question of the day. What's up?
Look at that cell phone, y'all.
It's Darnell. My question of the day.
All right, y'all. So Martellus Bennett actually went on like a mini rant this weekend on coaches playing the role of a father, and I thought it was pretty interesting. So I want to ask you guys, what are your thoughts on coaches acting as father figures?
I'm gonna let the professional athletes go first.
Ah, man, look. this is tough for me. My father was there, and I would put him up as father of the year every single year. Mm-hmm. Always there in support, never there pushing me. My coaches had a defined role, which was obviously to have great influence, sometimes being that third parent, but never stepping on the toes of my father. And I don't need a father figure when I grew up with one. And I will also look for role models within my family unit before I would look for a guy who's maybe volunteering his time or getting paid just to teach me a craft.
Well, for me, you know, I had I was blessed with a stepfather and a father, and both were in my life. And, you know, it's like me taking my daughter or my son to school. That teacher has my child the majority of the time during that day. I drop them off at 8, I get her at 2:30, right? So she has the majority of the time. So that, whether it's a male or a female, that is that role model, that mother, that father of them. Because you want to have a rapport with that coach or that teacher. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know about, you know, Bennett, but Jim Herrick was like a father figure to me. You know, it's okay to have more than one.
Yeah, I'm right there with these guys. I had a great father, and so didn't need the coaches to be my father figures. But I had some coaches I was very close to, my high school head coach, Jerry Stauffer. And we had, Coach Willen.
Right.
Coach Willen coached me and Darnell.
Mm, yep.
And he was a father figure to a lot of players that didn't have fathers. I can think Coach Willen's in the hospital right now. I hope you're feeling better. But he was a father figure. We had a guy, co-captain on our team, Chris Hurt, that had nobody.
Right.
And if it wasn't for Coach Willen taking him back and forth to school and doing a lot of other things, he would have had nothing. So I don't know where Martellus is coming from.
Yeah, it always seems like in absence of something or someone will raise your kids.
Right, exactly.
A lot of times we know it's the streets. We know it's the community.
Right.
And luckily for some guys, it's a father figure in athletics. But I didn't have that absence, so I'm not exactly understanding where this comes from.
Yeah, I think it's all case by case, right? Like, as a coach, you have to find out what does your player need? And in some cases, you got certain players, like you said, don't have a father figure at home. Right. So if you know that as a coach, I think you should step into that role, give them that discipline, and kind of give them that father figure that they need. There's some other players that maybe they're getting that discipline at home, they're getting certain things at home, and you coach them differently. So I just think it's case by case, but I don't have a problem.
Former NBA veteran and Big 3 champion Ketino Mobley is back. Let's talk Duke star Zion Williamson, who grabbed headlines last week after injuring his knee in a high-profile game against rival North Carolina. The NBA has proposed abolishing the one-and-done rule by lowering the draft age from 19 to 18, thus allowing talent like Zion to skip college and go directly to the NBA out of high school. Any rule change would need to be collectively bargained with the Players Association. But Mavs owner Mark Cuban is raising a red flag, saying, quote, "The really bad unintended consequence is you're going to see AAU programs and parents push harder to get kids featured, maybe at the expense of their education, maybe at the expense of really learning how to play basketball. There's going to be a lot of people pimping none and done, and you're going to see a lot of kids fall hard and be ineligible, all kinds of issues." I think Mark Cuban raises a legitimate concern. Mm-hmm. And I think there'll be other ramifications from this. Again, I'm crystal clear on this and have it. I don't think the one and done or the none and done is the right thing. I wish they would figure out a way to pay college players real money to stay in college. I think there will be ramifications from this.
Stopping short of finding a real program that provides value for those who are staying in college for that experience, that education, I will say it should be none and done until you can find that system, because I think that will be optimal. The reality is one and done does nothing but stop a guy who's potentially prepared for a professional experience and not allowing him to have that. So I say none and done. I want you to have a high school diploma just because I want a minimum standard in terms of citizenship and standards met in terms of education before you enter the NBA. But there have been countless guys who went none and done and been great for the game and great off the court as well. So until they can figure out something that's going to really allow these guys to grow in their collegiate experience on, off the court, and monetize it, none and done. If you're ready, go pro.
The funny thing is I understand both points. And being a basketball player, not fortunate enough to leave high school, right, to go straight to the pros. It's you understand what Mark Cuban is saying. Because I'm not a fan of AAU. I don't think they teach you how to play basketball. right? I think it is more of a pimping kind of thing for a lot of the kids. And kids that are from California, you might get a kid that's amazing from Vegas and they ship to California to play on the AAU team, and then another kid from Georgia and they all play together. And I don't think that's fair. Like when I was younger, your talent was in your city, right? And that's what you played with. Now, as far as if you're eligible and you're good enough to play in the NBA, I think you should go through some type of course, and that course is at least a 6 month to a year course. So if I know if I'm going to my senior year and I'm number one, I think from financial classes to real estate classes to things like that that's going to preserve your wealth the older you get, I think those things you should be able to, they should be teaching you.
The NBA PA, they teach that stuff. It's where the guys pay attention.
Well, no, that's when you have the money already, right? That's orientation when you're already there. Yeah. We're talking about in high school. I think there's things in high school that just for everybody, but especially athletes, they should be learning those little things like that because that can preserve your wealth when you get to that point. Now, you know, being paid in college is great too.
But you need the experience to map on to so you can really internalize that, because like he said, we had that as well in the NFL, and you go through all those courses of education without experience and you don't know where it lands. Because right. One, I want to go through this process and do it my way, and it may not be necessarily the way that the former player did it, and it may not be a way that gets me in harm's way, but it's still the education just kind of gets drowned out because I have nothing to map it onto. Right. So right. It has to be a continual process.
Mm-hmm. Look, I was told this as a possible angle on all this in terms of the NBA's collective bargaining agreement, I think, is 2021. Mm-hmm. This wouldn't go into effect until 2022. Uh-huh. Guess who has a son who will be 18 in 2022 and eligible to go straight from high school to
LeBron.
The pros?
LeBron.
Yeah. LeBron. And that perhaps is a little bit of the driving force of the removal of LeBron wants to play in the NBA with his son, and one of the quickest way to do it so he doesn't have to spend a year in college would be able to get rid of this rule. And then LeBron can be just like LaVar Ball, and he can play with his son.
Well, I don't mind how it gets done if it gets done and it's the right thing. Like, I understand where you're coming from. Like, oh, LeBron once again flexing his power, but nothing moves without someone powerful and something powerful behind it. So, yeah, if that's the agenda, it saves a lot of other kids.
But my issue is, like, if that's part of the push, let's say it's only 2% of the push, whatever percent, is it a push for the right reasons? Again, does anybody at any point ever say, are we doing what's best for the game of basketball? And again, I think a lot of the conversation about the NBA is dishonest. I really do. I don't think the product on the court is as good as it could be if these guys spent some time in a real apprenticeship.
It's because they don't know how to play. You're right.
Yeah,
they don't have a high IQ, and that's what it is. But if you're going to put those kids out there, it's like it's a trade mechanism app called Think and Swim. And you go to Think and Swim first to learn how to trade with fake money until you go to the E-Trade and Ameritrade. You do that first. So I think you have to set yourself up, especially because you're going to have a certain amount of money, whether it's the G League, whether it's across seas, or whether it's the NBA. You're still going to have some money, and if you're good enough, it'll be the NBA. But I think you need to set yourself up in those type of situations first.
Well, I mean, look, Kobe was great for the game. LeBron's great for the game.
Kevin Garnett. You're
talking about the
aberration. There's a flip side to that coin. I respect that. Robert Swift. Ooh, what happened there?
Kwame Brown.
Like, there's flips to the coin, but you got to get a guy the opportunity.
I'm talking about just the – we can talk about Kobe, LeBron, and KG, the best of the best.
Right.
But I'm talking about, what about the mid-level players do have 10-year careers in the NBA that don't know how to play this game? Don't know how to prepare, don't know how to compete. Again, that's a lot of the things you learn in the college experience. What blew my mind going from high school to college was like, I thought I used to work hard. And then I got to college, I was like, holy cow, I was doing nothing. When you go from college to the pros, it's like, wow, I thought I prepared myself in college.
Yeah.
But then I get to the pros and it's a whole nother level.
So wouldn't you want to skip that step? Because it's always evolving. So who cares what your collegiate level of preparation is? It's going to have to change again once you get to the pros. My best experience is going to be at that level. When I trained for football, there was a day I used to run track in the offseason. Then it became football specialized training because the 400 meters not going to help you on this football field. You got to get right into the grind of it and see how it goes.
Time for a big story. Let's move to LeBron James, whose first season in L.A. hasn't been going to plan, with the Lakers currently the 10th seed in the West, prompting LeBron to call out his teammates this week for letting distractions get in the way. But he's not the only star having a rough year. Kyrie Irving and the Celtics are the 5th seed in the East and have had plenty of drama of their own, including getting embarrassed by the Raptors last night. After the game, Kyrie didn't have much to say.
It seems like lately, when the team has hit you guys with a big run, you haven't responded. What is behind that?
I mean, talk about the lessons you want to take away from this game. Is there anything specific you really want to focus on for tomorrow?
Just remaining tough.
Brad talked about just defensively, guys have been taking shortcuts. So do you see that, and how do you guys fix things like that at this point in the season, you feel like?
I don't know, it's up to Brett.
Marcus said that you guys aren't playing together. Is that a fair diagnosis?
Is Marcus in pain?
Man. All right, this is kind of interesting. Who's handling the disappointing season the worst?
Oh, man.
LeBron James or Kyrie Irving?
Just based off of expectations and seeing a team almost fully realize who they are and what they were, which is the Boston Celtics, I have to point at Kyrie Irving. This was a team that pushed LeBron last year with the Cavs to 7 games. This was a team this year when Kyrie Irving is not in the lineup, actually wins more games than they don't. And I think it's all centered around Kyrie Irving in terms of what is your real impact and what is your real effect on this team and the greater good. You think about it, he's an amazing player. But at the same time, it's not materializing to added success for this team. So LeBron is having his own struggles, but when LeBron's not in the lineup, the Lakers don't win. When Kyrie's out of the lineup, the Celtics do win. Got a point at Kyrie.
Who's handling it worse?
I got a point at Kyrie myself. I cover Kyrie in Cleveland when he was going through that, you know, going through his things with LeBron, and he would give us those short answers, response. It was simple questions, and he would snap. You can tell he just wasn't in a good mood, didn't like where he was at with the organization. I'll tell you right now, boy, it don't look good for the Celtics as far as keeping that guy long term. I'm just saying, like, I used to tell people, like, Kyrie was always the toughest player for me to cover. Like, I've always had good relationships with, you know, a lot of players throughout the league. Kyrie was always the one that was just the most difficult. And I think everybody else is starting to see that. And look, it's going to take, I'll just say this, I don't want to venture off topic, but it's going to take for the Boston Celtics to really go deep if they're going to really retain him, because you can tell something is just not right with him in the organization. It has to get amended before the offseason.
And worse is a tricky phrase, because we've seen this kind of with LeBron before, whether that was in Cleveland or Miami. He said some things about teammates, demands, what he expected of everybody. So we've kind of seen this before, even when they were winning. They may have gone through a slump or some things like that. And the reason why I say it's Kyrie a little bit more, one, to your point about expectations,
I think
Kyrie thought coming in, being a leader, having won a championship, been there before, that now the rest would follow. And by him leading the way he does, that those young guys would come right behind. But it's a difference when you have a young team compared to older guys that understand it. Yep. These young guys came in with high expectations. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Yep. Come on, Rozier, what we did last year, exactly. We want to catapult our careers.
Exactly.
And the lack of communication on how Kyrie communicated with that team divided him a lot more. Mm. And sometimes what he did on the court divided him. And not knowing how to handle leadership and be a leader, you can't be taught it. Sometimes you have to kind of have a sense and feel for it. He hasn't handled that part well. So a lot of it comes back to the young guys, but also some of the things he hasn't done well that have affected, you know, this Boston season.
I'm going to go with LeBron just because when it comes to expectations, one guy is king and the ruler of the NBA. His team is in jeopardy of not making the playoffs. He has been calling out teammates. And he, bottom line, Jim said it earlier, in football we said the eye in the sky don't lie. Mm-hmm. LeBron's on tape giving no effort. I don't see the tape. Now, Kyrie may do a lot of silly things, but I don't see the tape of him giving no effort. That, to me, makes it bend towards LeBron has handled it worse.
Yeah, it's interesting with Kyrie. he suffers no fools. And when you're around someone like that, be careful because a lot of times they won't even let you know what they're thinking, but they will show you in response. Right. Because he doesn't even want to engage with you. Like, he just cuts it off. He's like, I'm not wasting my words on you. Not giving these pearls to swine. You know what I mean? And he's just going to move on.
You peasants.
You peasants. And it's amazing. I think Kyrie did walk into a situation. He said, y'all went to game 7 without me? Oh, watch this. And it's when you're a young player trying to get it, winning is not all that matters. It's also, can I be a part of this winning recipe so I can get mine? Kyrie, you got yours. Can I get mine? So Kyrie went from Cleveland to Boston to get his as the alpha of a team. Mm-hmm. And he forgot that he went to a team that they're all alphas saying, we want to get ours too. Mm-hmm. And you can see right now that they're just butting heads. And I think, like you said, Chris, Kyrie at the end of the season.
But wasn't that the same thing he wanted, Kyrie? Kyrie wanted to get out of the shadow of LeBron and say, I want to go back and play point guard. Mm-hmm. I want to run a team. Mm-hmm. Well, to your point, Chris, you probably speak to this too. Those young guys said, listen, we want to grow and show that we can.
We want to run a team.
You don't think Rozier, after the display he put on last year, those minutes got decreased?
Yes.
That they don't sit in the locker room and talk about some things?
He want to start for sure. That was such a sweet take. You know, almost what you just said, it always reminds, I've been having a sweet tooth ever since I stepped on this plate. I've been having to move for some California raisins ever since I seen this.
Oh, you just snapping. I'm coming at you, man.
I'm going to bring out my old sports station joke. I'm going to have to bring out the joke.
Uh-oh.
I digress. Move on. You're right, JJ. Go ahead.
I'm going to throw the ball back in your lap.
Oh, man.
Does Boston want Kyrie next year?
I think what they gave up to get him, I think they have to salvage that. Mm. You know, giving up Isaiah, you got to salvage that. Just from the perspective of not feeling like you were wrong, just the public perception of being wrong. The Celtics, you know, you think about the Celtics. Brad Stevens is thought of as in high regard. The front office is always thought of in high regard. I don't think they want that on their resume to give up a talent like that. He is a talent, as much as he's not working. But, hey, let's put some blame on Brad Stevens.
I'm about to say, thank you.
Let's put some blame
on him.
Whatever
to the genius.
Yeah, let's put some blame on him. Now, look. Last year, it was basically a college system with all these guys with no egos, no stars. Now you got to incorporate Kyrie, who's a superstar and has an ego. You incorporate Gordon Hayward, who's an all-star and has an ego. You got to manage egos in this league. He hasn't done that.
Mm. You know what? Sometimes the fruit from a poisonous tree is poison. And so I'll defend Brad Stevens a little bit here because I haven't watched nearly enough of the Celtics to know if this is truly, truly what I believe. But I just think Kyrie coming off that LeBron James tree, mm-hmm. where LeBron is basically coaching the team or helping coach, co-coaching the team, that Kyrie comes to Boston and he wants to do the same thing as LeBron. Instead, where he had it, Brad Stevens had a team where everybody looked to him and he was the only voice.
Yeah.
Kyrie's a little extra voice. He's fruit off the LeBron tree, and he's not 6'9", 290 pounds, or 260 pounds, and a once-in-a-generation talent like LeBron. He can't do it.
Fruit.
All right, welcome back with Locke and Wiley, joined now by Fox NFL analyst Mark Schlereth. Let's move to New York, where Eli Manning's future has been a heated topic of debate the last few years, with a lot of people expecting the Giants to move on from the aging quarterback. But general manager Dave Gettleman said today that the narrative around Eli is unfair, and head coach Pat Shurmur says he fully expects Eli to be back with the team. This seems crazy to me. This at Eli's expiration date was like 3 years ago.
Hey.
And I can't believe they haven't put the proper pieces in place to move on from him. And if he wants to go someplace else and be a stopgap quarterback, a mentor for someone, he needs to do it someplace else other than the New York Giants. This decision catches me off guard and amazes me.
It doesn't catch me off guard, even though I agree with you. The expiration date has expired, has passed on Eli Manning. He still has equity in his franchise. Two-time Super Bowl MVP quarterback. He still is box office. People still rally around the name of Eli Manning. And his game,
other than Archie and Peyton?
No, yeah, yeah. Get into an argument with a Giants fan. You'll hear it real fast, real fast. 3 years ago? Yeah. 2 years ago? Yeah. Even a year or so ago? Yeah. Then you watched last year, and then you started to see some glimpses of a quarterback that actually played better than advertised. 21 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, 6 games with 100 quarterback rating or higher. No games where he threw over 2 picks. Like, a lot of the narrative that was out there was being recycled. But if you dive into the details of just last year's performance, you say, okay. And then you couple that with the indictment on this year's quarterback class, and that's where you have Eli Manning has another year with the Giants. They're really just talking bad about this quarterback class.
I think one thing about Eli Manning is Eli Manning's a professional quarterback. Has he slid? Yeah, most guys do. As they get older, they slide. But I think what Dave Gettleman is saying here is he came in to be the general manager, and he said, I took over a franchise that was completely dysfunctional, that mismanaged their offensive personnel grouping. And I think one thing is when you become an elite quarterback, you tend to overlook a lot of issues that you have on your football team when it comes to building your football team. You show me the team that dominated the line of scrimmage last year in the playoffs, I'll show you the team that won the game. 100% of the time. You show me one game where the New York Giants actually dominate a line of scrimmage. They don't. They haven't in years. And that locker room was an absolute mess. I mean, a mess to the point where they had to have essentially security protecting Eli Apple. Like, that's how much of a mess that room was. So I think a lot of it's easy to put it on Eli and say, Eli's no good anymore. But I think Dave Gettleman comes from an angle of, hey, they didn't build this team from the inside out. They relied on Eli Manning to carry them, and he no longer has the ability to carry him. Although he did throw for 4,299 yards last year,
yeah.
And I had a career-high completion percentage of 66%.
Right.
So Dave is saying, hey, listen, I know he's not long for our franchise, but if we draft a quarterback, if we bring Haskins in and let him mentor, much like Alex Smith did for Patrick Mahomes,
I heard Gettleman inference that
right.
Kansas City and just Alex Smith a lot more to offer on the field than Eli Manning.
Well, will Eli Manning be willing to do it? Because you're 100% right. Talking to Matt Nagy, who's now the head coach of the Bears, but was the offensive coordinator, he was like, the growth of Patrick Mahomes, a ton of the credit goes to Alex Smith, the way he took him under his wing, the way he coached him along, the way he helped him prepare, full well knowing at the same time, hey, this kid's taking my job. Like, I got to go find a new job. Now, Eli just knows he's leaving. There's a difference between knowing you can continue to go out and play and you're one step away from being a fan. And Eli's going to fandom here after, they're going to put him to pasture.
And let's not overthink this. At the root of all this sports, professional athletics is a business. He's still good for business while you figure out what's best for business. And that is another quarterback coming in the fold that you can trust. And there's not a quarterback in the landscape right now that they could trust. So you go to Eli, like you said, who had some numbers last year, top 10 in terms of yards and his best completion percentage. And with Saquon Barkley there and Odell Beckham and that receiving core, you can still dress it up.
Y'all have flipped me because, one, I have to acknowledge this. When you started talking early on, the Giants not one of my favorite teams to watch. So I don't play real close attention to Eli Manning. And I do get caught up in the narrative.
So I
agree with that. But also I think the point of if you want to get a stopgap quarterback, if you jettison Eli and you want to – it's going to be relatively expensive.
Right.
And so if you're going to blow the money, blow it on a guy that you already know.
Mm-hmm.
Who, again, Mark, your point about if it's a bit chaotic, who better than a Manning to survive in that chaos
right.
rather than someone you don't know.
I know one thing. You know, I live in Denver, and I played for the Broncos, and now the Denver Broncos are going to sign on March 13th. They're going to sign Joe Flacco, and they're going to pay him $18.5 million, and they still are on the hook for another $12 million for Case Keenum. So you go that route, but do you really want to pay Aaron Rodgers money to have Joe Flacco quarterback your football team? That's what will go on in New York Giants right now, because you got to pay Eli, and you're going to bring a stopgap, maybe a middling-type quarterback in there, pay him $10, $12 million, and now all of a sudden I'm paying elite quarterback value for – for return. I think that's what you have to look at as you managing your franchise.
And it's smart money. You have someone who's promoting your franchise in the right way, someone who still has the Super Bowl mojo on
He's
him.
He's got some cachet, right?
Yeah. I mean, everywhere
that's
he
the
goes.
Right last name.
Yeah, he has the right last name. And look, this team, is as faithful as its options. And they don't have any options, so they're going to show one more year of faith to Eli Manning.
Whitlock and Wiley.
Aye.
Jim Jackson's back with us. Time for my favorite segment.
Yep.
Anti-social. Mm-hmm. Our social media manager, Big Swole. Big Darnell Swole. Smith.
Hey. I see you in that way.
Boom. Oh, now, hey. You need to get on that treadmill.
And stay out that kitchen.
Right. That's the problem.
Right, that's it.
What's popping in the Twitterverse?
Yes, sir. We're going to start off in the NBA, where Russell Westbrook was in Denver taking on the Nuggets and took a few pushes from a young fan sitting courtside. Russ wasn't having it and gave the kid an epic stare down. Later, Westbrook and the kid made up, but I thought it was kind of crazy. I mean, kid or not, he should know better than this. And Jim, you were there last night. Was Westbrook out of line?
Well, I think at first he thought it was somebody else
right.
that pushed him right there. And plus, he was already frustrated the way the game was going. He wasn't playing that well. Then he realized it was a kid. He was like, man, if you don't get your son, man, tell him that,
exactly. how
to
act.
Then he talked to the kid, you know, a little bit in that. But I think at first he thought it was a fan that reached out and kind of like pushed him a little bit.
Yeah, look, I don't think he did too much. It's never too early to let these kids know about boundaries. And, and look, if your father's not going to let you know this because he's just acting out the behavior that he's accustomed to, then let me just give you a moment from a role model. And so he didn't go at the kid. It's just like, man, I mean, that kid is old enough to know that you're not supposed to do that.
Right.
So, you know, you can look at that, the court size seats and the kid feels entitled, spoiled little brat. Let me check you real quick. I like it.
I like what Russ did on the court. I didn't like the way he answered the questions after the game from the media.
Oh, what was that?
Sounded way too serious.
So
what he actually did on the court, nothing.
Okay,
appropriate,
that's where I'm at.
Blah, blah, blah. But after the game, I think.
What did he say after the game?
He described, the kid hit me. And the kid didn't hit him, he touched him.
Well, don't do that. I mean, if a kid hits me, I'm gonna say the kid hit me. I'm not saying it hurt. I'm not saying he did it with malice.
He touched him.
Oh, a friendly gesture.
Then he said it's too much leeway with fans or whatever.
True.
Man,
what?
Courtside, man, this goes on all the time. If that had been Spike Lee, there would have been no comments made.
Well, Spike might have been his boy. And you know what? You had that relationship. The kid needed to learn that, too. Context and relationship. You got
grown
a lot of lessons.
Business.
Grown folk business. I know you got grown folk money, but you ain't got grown folk business.
I like what he did on the court.
Okay, I'm with you.
It's just not that serious. This isn't that serious. The kid, you know, the dad can say, hey, sit down.
Yeah.
My father would have had to do that to me.
You wouldn't have been sitting there.
No, we were sitting up way up in the rafters.
Exactly.
And my father all the time, you don't sit your ass
Malice in the palace.
Snatch him real quick. Right.
Rocker room style.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, staying with the NBA. Charles Oakley is back in the news. Y'all remember that crazy incident that resulted in a one-year ban from MSG? Well, 2 years later, Oakley isn't sure him and Dolan can fix things, even claiming the whole thing was racial, saying it was wrong what happened. Happened like it did in the 60s, 50s, and 40s. It ain't changed. And now, I thought Oakley went a little too far with this comparison. Y'all think the MSG incident was racially motivated?
No. It was Oakley motivated. Look, man. Oak watches the show occasionally. He will occasionally have something smart to say to me or to anybody, but come on, man. This ain't the 40s and 50s. You shove in security. You're a millionaire sitting damn near courtside. You're yelling at the owner. That ain't the 40s and 50s. Maybe he needs to do some research on the 40s and 50s, but this ain't it.
Yeah, to provide the third rail to your argument by always going back and saying this is like it was. Listen to the stories my father from Texas, small town in Texas, colored bathrooms. You not pushing a white security guard multiple times and thinking you just gonna get escorted out? Oh, it would have been different. So, I mean, he just tried to provide a little more oomph to the story. But
yeah, Oak is my guy. He took care of me growing up. He introduced me to some places in New York. It's tough for me because he had been dealing with some stuff with the organization because he'd been critical of the organization before. Mm-hmm. That's how a lot of this stuff kind of got started, mm-hmm. okay? So when it reached this boiling point, one thing you don't do with Oak is put your hands on him.
Oh, we know that.
Once you do that, it's going to be a problem. He don't start nothing, but he damn sure go finish something when you put some hands on him. And so I think it's more to it in the conversations with Dolan and upstairs because of what went on. So his point of view, which is not being talked about, is a lot different than what we see right there.
Well, then push Dolan. You can't push his enforcer.
Dolan wasn't right there. Dolan,
then don't push them.
Dolan was like this.
Yeah, Dolan was like, I get him.
Exactly, get him. That's what I pay you for.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, moving on to something starting to buzz online. A report came out that CFL directed the Montreal Alouettes to release Johnny Manziel and have since banned him from the league because he contravened the agreement. Now, I ain't gonna lie, I had to look up what contravene meant in the dictionary.
Violated.
He violated the terms of his contract. Mm. And since then, Manziel responded saying, I want to thank Coach Sherman, my teammates, and the CFL fans. My time there reestablished my love for the game of football and the work that goes into it. I look forward to exploring new options within the U.S. Now, you only get so many chances in life, so this might be the end of Johnny Football.
No. He'll be in the AAF.
XFL.
You need the marketing.
Yeah, he's going to be in one of them.
He's going to be there.
Damn right. See, if Johnny Manziel was pushed when he was courtside at 7, this wouldn't happen. This is what happens.
His father should have taught him better.
He was spoiled. He's spoiled, man.
All right, what's next, Darnell?
Yeah, moving on to Laker great NBA legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was putting 4 of his 6 NBA championship rings up for auction among some of his other memorabilia. Twitter has been commending Cap for his charitable act, and Kareem has said that much of the proceeds will be going to his Skyhook Foundation charity. Whitlock, what do you think is going on here?
First of all, let's be clear. You said Cap, and it almost sounded like that. You brought Cap. We're talking about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I don't know. I'm going to ask. You talking about championship rings and MVP trophies? And much of the proceeds going to charity,
I don't think he's broke. Let's just you know why? Because if you're broke, you're selling all 6 of them there. Let's just be real. I ain't keeping two of them.
Yeah.
I'm broke, bro. I need all this. Two, this goes back to what I tell you, and I've had too many players say it off record, not on record. Everybody ain't in the game for them championship rings, man. We selling that to the fans, and it sounds great. Give me $100 million or give me a couple of championships. Like, bros is taking this dough. He's just basically saying, look, we grew up in all the accolades, all the awards, and then you get to a place where, where's your trophy? Where's your MVP? Oh, it's in the garage.
Exactly.
Oh, it's in storage. Mm-hmm. I just think that he's showing truly what the value of a championship ring is throughout life.
Well, you know how Kareem has always been. The activist has been bigger than just basketball. Good he point. Was a hard player to read. I had the opportunity to be around him with my short stint with the Lakers. This doesn't surprise me because the social aspect of always what he wanted to do.
Much. He could have said most.
Listen, he going to keep a couple dollars in his pocket. Well, ain't nothing wrong with that. Would you keep a couple dollars?
I'm keeping most.
So most of the proceeds going to you, the other going to the charity.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Right, what's next?
Yeah, now we're going to move on to the hottest show on TV, The Masked Singer. Uh-huh. Everyone online is talking about tonight's 2-hour finale, which you can catch here on Fox. Antonio Brown and our buddy Terry Bradshaw have already been revealed. And we're down to the final 3 tonight, the Peacock, the Bee, and the Unicorn. All right, we have no clue who the contestants are. So, guys, what athlete would y'all like to see on this show?
Athlete?
Yeah.
Oh, it's easy.
Oh.
Odell. Stop playing. He a rock star. Yeah. If Odell popped out one of them things, half that audience going to faint. Like, it's just that serious. So, I want to see Odell go get it.
Nah, I wouldn't go Odell. But anyway, let me think. Go ahead.
I'm going to say Tiger Woods.
Oh, okay.
You know why? Because nobody would expect it.
That's real. True.
Nobody would expect Tiger Woods to come out there and do that.
Oh, that would be epic.
I'm going to go a different route. I go with Robert Kraft. He likes to be.
Oh, see? He was already on stage.
That would be off the charts. He comes out with Meek Mill. That would be incredible.
They're going to grab that uniform like,
that would be, I'd like to see myself on this show. I want to be on this
show.
Can
you sing?
I can't sing, but I love singing. Yeah, I cannot sing a lick.
Mm-hmm, go ahead.
All right, let me get that.
Listen, this leads to, because again, and I don't want to beat up Toni Harris because you know what? It's great. She's going to college. She's going to get educated. She's from Detroit. She's survived ovarian cancer. Do we think there will ever be a time within our lifetime, the next 30, 40 years, where a woman will actually play college football at a position in a real way?
I've had this conversation different ways with different star women athletes. I had a conversation with Lisa Leslie one time, just joking around. I was like, Lisa, if you played in the NBA, would you have given them buckets? She was like, Marcellus, do you understand what the NBA is about in terms of size, strength, mm-hmm. speed? She's like, it would have been a whole lot of hell to pay to get those buckets.
Right.
And that's Lisa Leslie, like yep. top five effort. No, I don't. There is a women's professional league. Let's show respect to that. Mm-hmm. There's an outlet for a woman who wants to play pro ball and play against other women who are professionals. But playing against the men, I just use my own story. I was a late bloomer. I was 14. My sister would whoop me up and down that apartment all day, every day. And then puberty hit. And then that voice dropped. And then my sister tried to whoop me up one more time. And without even much effort, it was like, no more of that.
Right.
And it's just what it is. So I don't think there's a day coming.
Is it, you know, we talked about maybe can a female be a punter, be a field goal kicker?
We have that already.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Right. So it's been done from that perspective in regards to that position. But the physical nature of the game itself, bro. I'm a big guy, and I played football in high school and in streets and everything. And the physical nature of it, you know, when a guy comes in who isn't mature enough to play body-wise, you know he can't play.
Yeah. It's funny, basketball players say it all the time. Charles Barkley always says, I played football one play, and then got hit.
But I'm going to disagree with y'all.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I just, yeah. I physically, in the next 20 years, do I think there's going to be?
I said 30 to 40 years.
Okay, 30 to 40 years? Do I think there's going to be a woman that can play at a major college?
No, I'm just college football. But go ahead, college football.
No.
I'm going to disagree with you.
I don't.
This is why. I think in 30 years, that'll be my window. I have seen, I go to these Adidas, Steve Clarkson football camp.
Mm-hmm.
And there I've seen some of Adidas' 7-on-7 big tournaments or whatever. And I've seen some young women that's 13, 14 years old playing wide receiver. And not playing it at a high level, but competing.
Yeah. I've seen that.
Competing.
I've seen that.
And so I think there's some young people, and I think there's some young people from poor communities, women that in another generation or two, we're going to see one that can play college football at the wide receiver position.
No, you're not. You know why? I know Steve. I've been to those camps, everything. And then one day, you're going to say, I'm ready to go play some real football. And coach is going to say, full pads. Game change.
I get what you're saying.
It's different.
But the bar won't be that high. I'm just saying, I've seen kids at this 7-on-7 that's far more legitimate than what we've seen with this Toni Harris.
Yeah, I agree with that, too.
And so I just think in another 30 years, can somebody get out there and play a little wide receiver and make a catch or two? Look, man.
I just keep seeing the guys are growing the same rate the girls are.
Yeah, you've been in this booth too long. Go sideline passes and look at the game. Yeah. Man, the boys are hitting.
Lock and Wiley, Jim Jackson is back. We're joined now by NBA insider Chris Haynes. Nice suit.
I mean, he church clean up in this.
Drip, drip.
He over here testifying.
No.
That's that new Yahoo money.
Man, Yahoo playing like that, Chris?
Yeah,
that's casket. See the brother all right. See the brother all right.
All right, let's move to Boston, where the Celtics' disappointing regular season continued last night with a loss at home to the Blazers. It was the fourth straight loss for Boston, but after the game, Kyrie Irving made it clear he's tired of hearing about the team's recent struggles.
Yeah, you can't worry about the standings now. It's too late in the season. As long as we get there, I can't wait for this. All this other BS about regular season and keep getting better and talking over and over and over and again about what we can do to keep getting better in the regular season.
What's your confidence level in the team going forward?
What do you mean?
Just in terms of, like, you know, you got a like
question
20,
is that?
A legitimate question. I mean, I just, you know,
nah.
How do you feel about this team?
All right, next question.
Man, Kyrie got a lot of buckets last night, but I just don't, I think his attitude is a problem, and I think Kyrie is a problem in Boston, is the problem in Boston.
I don't think he's the problem. I think there is a problem in Boston, and no one is being fully transparent about this, so they're punting the issue down the field and saying, okay, when it matters most in the postseason, we're going to hit the switch, and we'll deal with that issue then, and we'll play ourselves into success, and that won't happen. The issue is twofold for me. One, Brad Stevens, wonder coach. I'm not hearing the genius of Brad Stevens. I'm going to let
it's
you.
It's been quiet.
It's been quiet, right. That criticism, and I need to hear a little more of a roar from that. But Gordon Hayward, I get it. This is where I become heartless in sports. We grade you because they're grading you when you're on the court, injured or not, coming off injury or not. And imagine being on a team that went to Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals. Then you add Kyrie, you think you're going to be great. And then you got a guy getting 27 minutes a game, and he's averaging 11 points. Now, is this a charity case we're doing out here, or are we really just going to evaluate players for what they are? He's under a guaranteed contract. He's not going anywhere. Work on your game. Do something. But you're giving this guy starter minutes and getting bench production. And I think all the guys notice this. And then when you're a guy like – whoever it could be, Jason Tatum, you got to go on the bench or whatever it may be. And you're Marcus Smart, and he's like, I'm not getting burned. And this dude's out there getting burned. I think that could eat up a locker room.
Well, look, Gordon Hayward, I kind of feel sorry for him because he's not back to form, obviously. He's still trying to work himself into the mix. The Boston Celtics have invested a lot of money, time, resources, and trying to get this guy back on the floor. So I understand what they're trying to do and giving as much minutes as possible without hurting the team, to see if he can regain some type of form that he had in Utah. Now, with all that being said, I agree with you 100%. I don't necessarily think Kyrie is the problem, but he's the face of the problem over there in Boston. And for some reason, I just think people are kind of hiding. I brought up Brad before, but they kind of like hiding this guy, shielding him, when all we heard last year was he was the next coming of Phil Jackson. He knows how to push every single button. His X's and O's are the best. And there's no doubt about it. I think X's and O's wise, coaching, his structure, his discipline, everything is great. It's impeccable. But when it comes to managing egos, when you have to sit a player down, talk to him, have some dialogue, say, hey, how can we get on the same page? Build a relationship. That's what I'm not hearing coming from the Boston Celtics. And then Kyrie, just a bad dynamic, a mix of his ego and things of that nature. So I think those kind of blend together is why we are where we're at with the Celtics.
Well, we're talking about spreading the blame around because it can't just go on one person, one individual. Let's start with coaches. You talk about this. To me, in the regular season, coaches manage minutes, egos, and injuries. That's what they do during the regular season. And once you get in the playoffs, that's when you really dive into the X's and O's. Brad Stevens' background was one at Butler where he had overachievers. Okay, he can allow the locker room to really police itself because they weren't overly talented, so they bought in. When you're successful, everything you do now is like, oh, A+. Oh, he's doing well. There's no conflict last year. He didn't have that. Things were rolling. This year now, he couldn't really dive into holding people accountable. Yep. Okay, so that's one issue. Second issue, we talked about this yesterday. Young players now feel it's my time. I got to come in here and prove myself based on what I did last year. I need to get better. My next contract is coming up. I want to be the guy. I'm anointed next. You're dealing with that. Kyrie, okay, as the face of an organization, you have to be responsible to handle this tough situation, okay? When you don't feel like it, when you don't feel like answering the question, when you don't feel like playing, you may be a little hurt, you're the guy, okay? And he's not handling that part well. So when you put all of that together, and the main person you don't hear from is probably the most stable is Al Horford. Okay, he's out of the mix. That's a guy that should provide the stability for the team, and you don't really hear from him from that. So you got all this stuff going on. You wonder why the Celtics are struggling. It's a mixture. It's like gumbo, bro.
Yeah,
bad gumbo.
I still go back to Kyrie, and it's just like his words here. To me, you can hear him and think he's saying, "Hey, once we get to the playoffs, it's really going to matter, and things are going to work themselves out." What I actually hear is a guy can't wait till we get to the playoffs and get this team. Because what you know, it's win or go home at some point in the playoffs, and he can go home and he can go. I can go to New York. I can go with Kevin Durant. I can start something new because this year ain't working.
Kyrie, a couple games ago, said in response to one question, go ask Brad Stevens. Go ask Brad. Mm-hmm. And to your point, do you think he's being handcuffed? Like, when you know there's a problem, when you know this is the problem, but that guy is being protected and coached to the point where you are the face and you're taking all the hits, but you can't call him out? You think that's the dynamic?
I don't think he's being protected, though. I think Brad Stevens' resume is his resume. The guy had incredible success at Butler. Mm-hmm. When he came into the NBA, incredible success. Took that team to the Eastern Conference Finals. That's going to buy you some leeway.
It does.
And deservedly so.
Is it buying Kyrie the leeway to hit the game-winning shot in the NBA Finals and be
it did
so
buy
close?
It did no buy more. Him some leeway, and that's why he got to take – he takes the most shots. He gets – you know, despite the team being successful, he gets to be the guy. Whitlock and Wiley, Iceberg Jim Jackson and Chris Haynes are back. Let's return to the NBA. Well, LeBron and the Lakers beat the Pelicans last night, but not without a little help from New Orleans, who played Anthony Davis just 20 minutes and sat him for the duration with just under 5 minutes to play in the third quarter of a close game. For his part, Davis said it was tough for him to sit out during crunch time. I watched this game last night, and this was embarrassing for me just as an NBA fan and a basketball fan that I'm watching a game like, oh, this ain't even a real game. That the New Orleans Pelicans have virtually no interest in winning, and we get it when teams tank, but this is like on a different level. The second best player, or arguably the best player in that game, doesn't play after midway through the third quarter. That's crazy, and it just puts a big – when you got LeBron on the court, it just puts a big highlight and focus on the fact, oh, man, some of these games just don't matter at all.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it's a bad look. If you think about it, neither side is winning. It's crazy. The NBA, I guess, in a tug of war with the New Orleans Pelicans, and in any negotiation, you want to win-win. And if not that, at least a win for one side – neither side is winning. Think about it. The NBA is like, okay, you got to put them out there. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, we're going to put them out there, but not in crunch time, not in meaningful time. And then New Orleans is not winning as well because they're not letting their franchise player play the 37 minutes he was playing all year until his demand. So I don't know which way is up in this situation. It's just a horrible look for the NBA.
It's a bad look because, one, I feel for Alvin Gentry, who was my assistant coach at Phoenix, because this goes on his resume as losing, okay? So he's preaching to his team about winning and, you know, finishing out the season, but yet and still organization says the best player has to sit down. Teammates, same thing. Why would I want to be here? Okay, you asking me to go out there and put it on the line, but you're not giving me the opportunities to win, okay? And it's a tough situation because the NBA says, Chris, as you know, you can't sit a player if he's not hurt. Okay, well, we don't want our franchise player to get hurt, so we'll play him in the first quarter, second quarter, third. He may get hurt in the first. Listen, when I tore my ankle up, it was 7 minutes in the game in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. He can get hurt in the first quarter as he can in the fourth. Mm-hmm. It's just a bad look all the way around.
We've had incidents or precedents that when a player is not a part of the of that team's future, they sit that player. They did it with Eric Bledsoe. They did it with J.R. Smith. Numerous other
Chandler
players.
Parsons.
Chandler Parsons. But the problem is Anthony Davis is of a superstar caliber. And I think if the NBA sat back and like, first of all, he shouldn't be playing. He shouldn't be playing. I'm usually all for the players and their right and their freedom to do what they feel. But in this regard, New Orleans has everything to lose in allowing this kid to continue to play. He has an injury history. And so one thing why the NBA's integrity is being killed with this situation right now, because you're playing them 22, 23 minutes. Everybody knows what you're going to do. They know that you're not out there trying to win, even though the game was close. The game is close. The Pelicans got a shot, and then they pull Anthony Davis for the remaining 15 minutes of the game. That just looks so dumb on many levels. That's why this is looking like a blunder. They need to sit him. The NBA needs to allow the Pelicans to sit him the remainder of the season.
But what's weird about it is Porzingis got traded for value, and he was injured. So this whole, like, narrative that he can't play because if he gets hurt, it's going to kill his trade value, is that really going to be the thing? Anthony Davis is on a trade market. You think they're not going to be suitors?
But I think when you're a small market team and the injury history that Anthony Davis does have, they have to protect themselves.
Max value.
They got to get max value. They got to protect themselves.
Marcellus, I was going to go to, and you can help me, because would anything like this ever happen in football?
No.
I can't.
You know why? Football, and I learned this being a player rep for 9 years, they talk about uniformity. So you got to think about the umbrella of the NFL is really about the jerseys and the name on the front. So a lot of interchangeable parts, including as long as you're playing under the umbrella of the NFL, we don't care. Small market, big market, you go to this team, to this team. NBA is star-driven. You guys talk about the individual. So now it gets individualized with the player and the team. Which team is this, though? Is this a small market team? Is this beneficial for the league? So when you have those kind of fragments, all of a sudden you're not looking at it like this is for the greater good of the league. You're talking about just one market or one player. That's why there's contradiction. Eric Bledsoe, go ahead. Yeah. Oh, you a superstar? No, you can't. But in the NFL, they just think about it all under one umbrella NFL.
This is a problem I think they need to fix.
They meaning the NBA?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. It's counterintuitive. We don't want you to tank, but you got to do this, okay? They know that New Orleans, from the perspective of where they're at, has to maximize Anthony Davis, okay? They know that in the office. But yet and still, you're forcing their hand to have to play a guy they're trying to protect. So what's the options for the NBA? Because this is a rule already in place. What's their option?
I think one of the things they're going to have to address, like, they're going to have to go really big picture because the max contracts you can get from your hometown teams don't seem to be enough incentive to keep those guys loyal. So maybe they're going to have to go even further, make it even more financially beneficial to re-sign with your...
But here's the thing. Agents are smart. How they got around the max salary contracts, super max, is, okay, we'll circumvent it. We'll do 1-2-year deals, get our bird rights, and we'll circumvent it. There's always going to be a different avenue from an agent's perspective. And keep in mind, free agency is a fallacy. Because if I'm an unrestricted free agent, I should be able to go to market and get what the market bears. By restricting me to say I can only make the most here at my home team and not in the market... is not really free agency.
Yeah, and it came back to bite them. They thought big Supermax time. Was going to just be the glue. Yep. You're not going anywhere. You get a Supermax.
These teams
Who has signed a Supermax? One person?
These teams have 7 to 8 years with these players under contract to show these players that they should be committed to this organization because we're trying to do the right thing.
Hey, everyone. Jason Whitlock here. Thank you for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. I want to tell you about another podcast from Fox Sports that we're very excited about. It's Waltrip Unfiltered, featuring two-time Daytona 500 winner Michael Waltrip. Michael will be speaking with the biggest names in NASCAR each week and discussing the biggest storylines in the sport, like Daytona 500 winner Denny Hamlin. Episode 1 is available already. Subscribe and listen to Waltrip Unfiltered right now. Let's get the show rolling.